I will call the meeting to order. I was hoping some more members would show up before we started, but it's our policy to try to start on time. So, do we have a quorum? We do not, so we'll wait on the minutes, and we'll start then instead with the agenda. And members, what we're doing today is taking a look at testing. Usually, the testing topic is in the policy committee where they work on what we're trying to assess, what we're trying to accomplish. But in this committee today, we are going to look at how much we are spending on testing. And we noticed that, for instance, the Department of Education had 5 staff in testing and assessments in the year 2000, and now there are 25. People are wondering, you know, have we gone whole hog and a little drunk on testing, or is it worth the cost benefit? And that's what we need to decide. And when we have a deficit of, the governor's now in the Tribune saying $6 to $7 billion, and I'm assuming that's as usual with his numbers, not counting inflation, then we need to examine all the things we're doing, and especially things that are costing more and more money as we go along, to make sure that's where we want to spend our limited dollars. So we have three of just the right people to help us with that today. Dr. Ye, if you could come up, we'll start with you. And Dr. Ye is here with limited time from the University of Minnesota. He had some testing information in the policy committee that was very, very interested, so we invited him to the Finance Committee. Some of you may remember him from the University Day when he was our last testifier, who had some very amazing information. Then we'll go to the department, and then Peter Olson-Skog, who's actually from Roseville Area Schools, but he's not just from Roseville Area Schools. He's one of our treasures in the state who has been helping the Department of Education, working with the MAG group, and so he comes highly recommended as well. Dr. Ye, do we have a quorum now? We do, so I'm going to take just a second, and Representative Swales, would you move the minutes, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, I so move.
Representative Swales moves the minutes of February 10th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Welcome, Dr. Ye, and I know you have a handout, so members, if you could get that up before you, and please go ahead and re-identify yourself for the tape.
Okay. Hello. I'm Dr. Stuart Ye, Associate Professor of Evaluation Studies at the University of Minnesota. I'm want to provide some information that I hope will be helpful as you consider assessment issues, options, and costs. First, I want to provide an update regarding adaptive testing that I think modifies some of my earlier comments in the Ed Policy Committee hearing. But there's now a bill before the U.S. Congress, H.R. 655, that would permit fully adaptive tests for federal accountability purposes. That bill was introduced January 22nd, so that's very new. In addition, the state of Oregon has implemented a partially adaptive test that has been approved by the U.S. Department of Education. So I think the bottom line is that there are potentially solutions to the barriers that had previously prevented Minnesota from implementing adaptive tests. I want to provide an update regarding my conversations with the commissioner, Dr. Dirk Mattson, who's here today, and the commissioner's assessment work group. And based on my conversations, and Dr. Mattson can correct me if I'm wrong, but based on my conversations, my understanding is that the Department of Education is planning to substitute adaptive tests for the MCA 2 exams to meet federal accountability requirements, and is planning to substitute end-of-course exams for the grad test. And finally, to eliminate the exit requirement, meaning that students would not need to pass the end-of-course exams in order to graduate from high school. I wanted to come back to the need to fund effective approaches for raising student achievement. There's a need to improve student achievement and not just measure it. And earlier, I had presented research findings from my own research regarding cost-effectiveness comparisons of various approaches for raising student achievement. And what those comparisons suggested was that the most cost-effective approach involves rapid classroom assessment systems. Those provide the biggest bang for the buck, meaning that you get the most increase in student achievement for the dollars invested. The cost for this type of system would be in addition to the Department of Education's proposal to implement computer adaptive testing and end-of-course exams. I'm going to present some preliminary calculations regarding testing costs that I think Dr. Matson and I were having a conversation just before the hearing, and so he'll have some, I think, further comments about this and elaboration. So let me take a minute to explain where I got these numbers. Northwest Evaluation Association has extensive experience in fielding computer adaptive tests, so I'm basing this estimate on the information that they provided to us a week ago. And I estimated for the state of Minnesota that it would cost $5.6 million a year. This is just the cost for an off-the-shelf test to meet the minimum federal accountability requirements, testing in grades 3 through 8 and grade 10 and math and reading. Okay, so that's just the cost for the test. That's just the cost for the vendor, essentially. If we were to add 10 end-of-course exams, I'm estimating, based on information that Northwest provided to me, that this would cost an additional $8 million per year. And the reason why it costs so much more to add the end-of-course exams is that you have a separate exam for each subject area. So if students were, for example, to have end-of-course exams in biology, chemistry, physics, English, algebra, etc., it would be a separate exam for each of those subject areas, and that gets expensive. These would be computerized adaptive tests. Regarding rapid assessment, which I am suggesting would be important to consider as a means of raising student achievement, if we were to implement that in all elementary schools, that would cost, there would be a startup cost of $16.4 million for all elementary schools in Minnesota, plus $5.5 million per year. So it's not cheap. I looked at the governor's budget for fiscal year 2010, and that budget lists $28.4 million a year for statewide testing. So if we were to think about implementing, for example, rapid assessment plus adaptive testing, in year one, that would cost $27.5 million. That, technically, that's within the governor's budget, but that excludes a lot of costs that are incurred by the Department of Education, and I think Dr. Matson can talk about those. If we then look past year one, we don't have to incur, we are not incurring the startup costs for rapid assessment. Those are one-time costs. But we do incur the ongoing costs. And if I add those to the ongoing costs for an adaptive test and for end-of-course exams, that totals $19.1 million. So that is about $10 million less than what's in the governor's budget for statewide testing, after the starting with a 2011 fiscal year. So I'm not saying that you would save $10 million, but there is an additional $10 million in the budget which could be spent on other things that the Department of Education has to pay for in order to field statewide tests.
Thank you, Dr. Yeh. I think that Dr. Yeh is the quintessential example of less is more. He's concise in his statements. His handout is concise, but boy, he said a lot. Trying to whisper in my ear, but I'm sorry, I can only do one thing at a time. Probably Dr. Yeh can do more than one thing. How long do you have, Dr. Yeh?
I actually can stay until 3:45 or 4 at the latest.
Okay, good, because I would like some interaction between you and Dr. Batson until you can be here at the same time. Good. Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Yeh, I'm just curious if you could remind me, are other school, are there districts that are using this rapid assessment now? How widely spread is it, or is this more theory?
Dr. Yeh.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland. There are over 60,000 schools across the country that are using this particular type of classroom assessment program. That doesn't mean that every classroom within those schools is using it, but it is used. It's a very popular program. It's used in a lot of the Minneapolis schools, so it is very popular.
Representative McFarland.
Good, Madam Chair. So there's not a district that's adopted this as their plan for testing?
Dr. Yeh.
I'm not aware of a Minnesota district that has adopted it district-wide. However, I did research in a Texas district that had implemented it district-wide, and I published a couple of articles based on that, and I'd be happy to get that to you if you're interested. Okay.
Dr. Yeh, where did you get the $28.4 million number for the governor's budget?
That's from the online, the governor's budget is online, and it is the final number there. It includes both the funds that are available through the state and also federal funds that come down.
State and federal both.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Representative Anderson.
Thank you for the compliment.
Yeah.
Doctor, just a question. At that meeting with Northwest a couple of weeks back, the figures they gave were kind of ballpark. Now, have you nailed those down a little bit further? So what about those costs, the numbers you have here today?
Dr. Yeh.
Okay. So the figure that Northwest gave us was for fielding their current generation of computer adaptive tests. And so they estimated a figure of between $12.50 and $13.50 per student, basically per test per student. And that basically includes the cost that Northwest charges to the school or the district for administering that test. So it's the vendor cost.
Representative Anderson.
And were there discounts, for example, for the students that would take the tests?
Dr. Yeh.
Yes. So the lower figure, the $12.50 figure, is a volume discount for those districts that implement the test in more schools.
Dr. Yeh, is the rapid assessment, is that the formative part, and then the adaptive test the summative part of the NWEA, or does someone else altogether produce rapid assessment part of the test?
These are different vendors. They're different systems, different purposes, different vendors, different costs.
Do you know who does produce the rapid assessment test?
So that would be Renaissance Learning Corporation. And so the specific names of the programs would be Accelerated Reader and Accelerated Math.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Yeh, with these rapid classroom assessment systems, the startup cost, does that include the technology needs that schools would need for more computers and training?
Dr. Yeh.
That's a very good question. And no, it does not. So let me clarify that. I've done some research about what it would take to implement this type of rapid classroom assessment system. And so in math, students receive printed sets of math problems. So you need one computer per classroom to print out each of the sets of problems per student. But it's not the case that each student sits at a computer and completes the problem. And in reading, students will read a book, and then they will sit down at the classroom computer to take a comprehension quiz that is geared to that particular book. But what that means is that not every student needs to sit down at a computer at the same time. So that's why the demand on the computers is not extensive. And if you have one computer per classroom, then you could implement the system.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Dr. Rose, could you talk a little bit about the cost effectiveness, the fact that the idea that rapid classroom assessments provide the biggest bang for the buck. Could you talk a little bit about the research behind that and how that would work for classroom teachers and students?
Dr. Yates.
Okay. I've published about six rough read articles on this topic comparing rapid assessment programs with other major approaches for raising student achievement. The method involves calculating all social costs. So that includes opportunity costs, the cost if teachers need to be trained, it includes those costs. So it's not just the budget cost, the financial costs, which are sometimes only a portion of the actual cost of an intervention, but it includes all of those costs.
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, and then as far as the payoff, what is it that teachers and students get? What is the benefit for this style assessment?
Okay. Dr. Ye.
I'm glad you asked that. So there's research, including randomized experimental studies, which have evaluated the impact of this approach on student achievement, and it shows an average impact of about 0.3 standard deviations, which is about 3 months of learning. So there's an increase in student achievement in the areas of math and reading. In addition, and I think equally important, is that because teachers can be more efficient teachers of math and reading, there's less pressure to teach to the test. So in the district where I had done my research, teachers and administrators told me that they were able to accomplish their goals of preparing students for the state mandated test, to prepare them to pass that test successfully at the end of the year without having to cut out other parts of the curriculum. And I think that's extremely important to educators. But it's related to the fact that it can be, if implemented properly, an effective approach for raising student achievement.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And if you're willing, we'll just keep you there while we bring up Dr. Mattson. In case you want to have any help understanding what... Oh, the PowerPoint, okay. And Dr. Mattson has a much longer handout, but in all fairness, we gave him a longer assignment.
Madam Chair, members, Chris Mattson, Director of Research and Assessment for the Department of Education, and thank you for pointing that out, Guy. The Chair identified seven items that would like to be covered, and then subsequent conversations had a restricted time frame, so I am pretty confident I'll fail miserably, but we'll see how well I can do. The first task that I'm to do is to bring you through a history, let me just back up real quick, a history of the state assessments, the logistics of how they've been added, talk about spending, both past, historical, and current, talk about the governor's proposal, what that cost involves, and also talk about alternatives to that proposal. So I'm going to bring you through kind of the testing legacy in Minnesota that interacts between federal and state, and I know that you're probably well familiar with it, so I'm just going to provide an overview of that. A survey, if you will. In 95, the legislature enacted this rigorous results-oriented graduation rule, and so began the BST in 8th grade reading and mathematics and in 10th grade writing, and state assessments, accountability assessments were underway. A lot happened in 97 to 2003. Tests were added. Part of this was under the Clinton administration and IASA, or the Improving America Schools Act, which was the precursor to No Child Left Behind. Testing was required federally in various grade spans instead of just grade levels now as we're at currently. So Minnesota had begun that work, 3-5 in elementary MCAs were begun, in high school in 2000 were the MCAs in 10-11. 2003 began the grade 7, And then, of course, while Minnesota was getting their testing system up and running under IASA, No Child Left Behind came in and said, and there's more tests. So we had to catch up to that. Also, the test of emerging academic English for demonstrating English language proficiency was required not only for state level, it originally started for state level, demonstrating that your program needs additional funding, and that is how funding is, as you well know, funding is transferred to districts based on student participation in that test, and then eventually it was became part of the federal requirements as well. In 2005, the BST was retired and replaced with the MCAT and the graduation assessment. We still do give that test for our students. This year's seniors, if they move through the school system in a traditional course, traditional progress, are the last group of students that are required to pass the basic skills test. In 06 was when all of the assessments first came online for in operation for No Child Left Behind. So we did have then in grades 3 through 8 and in high school reading and mathematics assessments. And those are the tests that Minnesota uses to determine adequate yearly progress. Now these are initials and acronyms that you recognize, I'm sure. In 2007, we did add additional tests. That doesn't mean we gave individual students more tests, but that we had flexibility that we took advantage of under federal guidelines. So we have some state-required tests in 2007, some federal flexibility tests that came online, and also a federal-required test. So for the state level, the GRAD was produced, and that essentially acts as a retest at the high school level, and I know you're well familiar, as we all are, with the conversations around the GRAD right now. We also took advantage of the federal flexibility to develop a more simplified English math test for English language learners. So their mathematics assessment would be done under this MTEL, or the math test for English language learners. Then we were also federally required under IDEA and NCLB to come up with a test for students with the most significant cognitive disabilities. So there are a number of tests that came online there. And again, those students they're taking one of those tests. 2008 were required by No Child Left Behind and South Wind State statute to deliver a science test in grade bands of elementary, middle, and high school. And so that began as well as that significant cognitive disability assessment in science as well. And then to provide you some history in the future, what we're looking at in 2011 is taking advantage of additional flexibility that the federal government is offering. These are funded, this is another alternate assessment. It is not for students who are significantly cognitively disabled, but it is for the tier of students who are on IEPs but will not demonstrate proficiency within the school year. Both these special education assessments are funded through federal dollars. As well, we have our first, if you will, the generation of MCA3s. We are required by statute to align the state tests in mathematics to the 2007 standards in 2011. So that's a brief history of where we're at. Here's the assessment costs or expenditures by fiscal year over the past year, and it is an increase, and as you well know, and we have added a number of tests, and I'll give you a couple of different I'll give you a different depiction of this slide in just a moment. But we do have a considerable jump. There's an interesting thing that happens in 2006, which is that, as you may recall, we were delayed. We had a technical work to do because this was the inaugural year of the assessments. We have technical work that had to be done, and we didn't pay that bill, essentially, until after the fiscal year was over in 06. And in 07, we did catch up. So we kind of had some activities squashed together within a fiscal year. This is a different look at that. This is the number of tests that we have over the past 10 years. Again, this doesn't mean it goes from 8 to 45. And that does not mean that we're giving 45 tests to one student. What that means is we've developed along appropriate guidelines from the federal and state requirements, either graduation tests, English language learner tests, math content, etc. A different way to look at this, this is certainly a very gross level, is this slide, to show the average cost for all tests. It's a very poor way of trying to do it. So what it does is take all of the expenditure and divide it by the number of assessments that we were building, the number I just had on that last slide. And it does show that we peaked up around the time of NCLB implementation and then dropped back down. And so...
Excuse me, we have one question. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Smith, would you just help me with this, as I look at this, and I appreciate how you've laid it out. Prior to 1995... and I was teaching at that time. I don't remember a lot of testing prior to that. Can you tell me, is there any data that shows pre-95 and post-95 all differences of ACT scores or SAT? Or can you tell us the difference in the student profile from pre-95, post-95?
Madam Chair, I'm sure we could try and do that using some nationally normed tests. I do not have that, I'm afraid, at the top of my head, but I'd be glad to try and provide that.
Representative Ward.
That would be helpful for me to see that data, anyhow.
Dr. Matson, just in general, not having the data, though, I think it's a very good question. Would you say that, in general, the testing is helping student achievement?
Madam Chair, I don't think that any assessment is going to help student achievement. What it is going to do is identify where the students are so that appropriate instructional strategies can be applied, and that is what's going to help the student achievement. That said, I think any teacher will say that you do need to know where the student is. Now, there are a variety of options, and Dr. Yin have had some great conversations about that, but any good teacher will tell you, whether it be formal or informal, I need to know where the student is so that I can progress that student. So I don't think testing improves student achievement. I think what teachers do with the information is what improves student achievement.
Exactly, but that's, I think, the question. Have teachers been using the information to improve student achievement, in your estimation, Dr. Manson?
Madam Chair, I would like to think that it's increased. I think there's always a challenge of assessment literacy and using data. I think we're very good at having a lot of data, and sometimes a little more challenge to use the information out of the data appropriately. I think that's true if you talk with folks who interact with pre-service teaching and so forth. There is not a lot of necessarily assessment literacy, and here are the scores, and now what do I do? Certainly something that is near and dear to my heart coming from a district, several districts, but it is a continual challenge and something that, as a state, I think many states struggle with that as well.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Matson, on the 2011 revision, rather the alignment of our math assessments to 2007 standards, you told us, and we've talked about this before, that you told us that we're required by NCLB to align those math assessments by 2011. What happens if we don't align them by 2011?
Dr. Matson.
Madam Chair, Representative, actually the requirement is from state statute, not from NCLB. So the state statute, and I hope I get this right because it's not one I'm in as often as the testing one, but is, I believe, 120B.023 that identifies when the benchmarks and the assessments, the standards and the assessments and implementation of school district must occur. That said, there is usually an appropriate transfer of time where the standards are allowed to be implemented into the school district before teachers are actually and districts are held accountable to them. So roughly 4 years, 5 years is typical in states. Some states do it much more quickly, but usually allow teachers some time and curriculum to align to that new set of standards before the accountability kicks in for that.
Representative Slocum.
Dr. Matson, Madam Chair. My question is, how quickly may teachers access the data from the MCAT with this test?
Dr. Matson.
Madam Chair, President Slocum, the results are delivered in June, and there are two critical pieces to that, and it is a while. It is not intended necessarily, number one, to serve as a formative assessment in its current design. I'm anxious to talk about the design that we've looked at to put in place. The assessment is designed to be the state's final exam. That's the purpose it serves. So it isn't that, as I've said several times to teachers, if we turn the results around to you the following week or 2 weeks later, you have a week left to remediate. So that said, that doesn't excuse the need to get the results back faster. We have two issues revolving around that currently. There is technical work of equating and scaling and all the rest of the psychometric efforts that we do to make sure that the results are absolutely 100% right, and we do many, many checks on that. The more considered item that takes time is that there about a quarter of the tests are human scored, and they're not only human scored once, but there are also many are back read, which means that we have to make sure that the scorer was scoring correctly, and tying those things in together takes a considerable amount of time.
We have improved for our graduate, for our high school level tests. We have prioritized those so that we can get scored immediately, and those results are back the first week in June, whether you passed on the MTA or on the grad. However, again, we are constantly working on trying to increase the speed of the results delivery without jeopardizing the quality and the accuracy of the assessment.
Okay,
can I follow up with a really brief question? So can you honestly, I'm a classroom teacher, can you honestly tell me that I can use these results just for student achievement? And how? And then explain to me how I do that.
Madam Chair, for individual students, I believe they have some merit because you do have strand information. If the tests were longer, I would say you would have even more information. However, the tests, again, were designed in their original design on the MCA 2 or the MCA, for that matter, to be a system accountability check. That is the state, is the district, or the school implementing the standards? And so their design is to say, is the curriculum being implemented correctly? So one would hope that districts are taking a look at this data and making curriculum decisions, improvements, teaching strategies, looking at curriculum maps at a system level. The farther down you drill, yes, the more challenging it becomes because of the limited number of items on those assessments.
Thank you. And if you could continue on to history, and we've got Dr. Madsen under the gun, but actually these tests are coming from the federal government, they're coming from us, the state legislators, and now we have what we have, and I actually like at least the summary that Dr. Yeh gave about where the Department of Education is going with moving on to the adaptive test, the end of course test for the grad, and eliminating the exit requirement. But now Michelle Weber is saying that that's not exactly the accurate summary. She's shaking her head back there. I like Dr. Yeh's assessment of where the department is going, but maybe we better get to where are they really going. And now we have this rapid assessment component that I think we all seem to like. That's why part of why we brought Dr. Yeh back, and that's yet another startup cost. So continue, Dr. Madsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe, if I'm reading Mrs. Weber's head shake correctly, I believe that the correction would be to say that right now there is conversation about what the exit requirement would be for on the MDE update that Dr. Yeh provided. So it isn't necessarily that the department has taken a position saying that there is a plan to eliminate it. It's simply that that's under discussion, and there are members of this committee that serve on that working group with the commissioner. So
Dr. Madsen, in other words, the first three bullets are correct, and the other one is under discussion, the fourth one.
Madam Chair, I believe that'd be correct.
Okay, well, I like the first three bullets and the fourth one. Continue on. Seems like we have to get rid of some things while we're adding others, or we're going to really have a lot and a lot of money.
Madam Chair, correct. And I think the fourth bullet, just to make a final comment on that, is more of a policy conversation than an assessment one. That assumption will be there will be some type of high school assessment. What policy do you add on that? What stakes is another conversation. I wanted to show you a quick breakdown of our current spending. This is how we essentially set up our payment schedule. So this is in large quantities. There are many line items underneath this, and I spare you those details. But this is essentially how we set this up for all of the assessments we do, the ELL assessments, the alternate assessments, etc. And there are some spending items in here. I make no bones about this. And I would concur. The issue is also that we are able to achieve some economies of scale because we are able to set the payment up like this in the sense that we do one shipment to schools when the results are ready. That doesn't mean they don't get them electronically earlier, but we don't send out the ELL assessment and then we send out, etc. So we're trying to achieve some of that. This is, by the way, is not going to match up with fiscal year because it is a 15-month contract. Our assessments basically run 15 months within a cycle by the time all of our scoring and so forth is done. I was asked to give a representation of cost per test, and that is a very challenging thing to do. And I will tell you that I sit at many national meetings, and we discuss this as testing directors among all the states. It is a very challenging thing to figure out because most states will do that by budgeting according to cost. Well, if we're going to do it by cost by kid, are we talking about a student who took a Braille assessment? Are we talking about one that took a large print assessment? Is this a special education student? So it's a very challenging thing to do. The way we have provided you that information is to take the test
and identify fixed costs that are going to occur no matter whether you give the test to one student or 1,000 students. And that would be Braille as a prime example. I'm going to have to pay for the translation of Braille, whether it's one student or 10,000 students. And then there is a volume cost, and that formula then is kind of how we work this out. So you can see the math in reading. Currently, we're at roughly about $10 to $11 per test, the science test. Because it's given to a smaller number of students, can affect that cost per test, and that's running roughly around $16. The MCEL, which is not a required test under federal guidance, but again, Minnesota at that time chose to initiate that test, runs, you can see, from the mid-20s and then drops back down in the out years. These four tests are essentially required under state accountability. One is used for both state and federal, but the grad writing, and it, you have these numbers, and there is a, I pause to say also there is a five-page handout that you can look at more detail on this. These numbers are explained in more detail than the slides are. But the grad writing, about $17 to $18. The BST in math and reading, you can see how the BST, because we have fewer numbers of students, there's still a fixed cost with producing those funds and sending them out. That increases greatly. We expect that to actually be able to end once that test is done. ELL test under TEAM and PSALM, roughly $11 to $12. And then you see the grad retest. Initial costs for development were about $18 a student when we got moving, and then moving down to $10. One last assessment that is not in your handout of that five page, and I'll just make you aware of this. This is, again, funded by federal dollars. This is the alternate assessment based on alternate achievement standards, or as we love the acronyms of AAAAS. This test is required by NCLB and IDEA, and it is an assessment for those students with the most significant cognitive disabilities. They are not measured under the same standards that their general education peers are. And you can see, again, this is a one-on-one administered test. It has a number of manipulatives that are involved in it, and you can see the cost per test is very high because you have a very specialized assessment for a specialized population. To talk briefly, I'll try and be very brief about the proposal within the governor's proposal and how we've thought about it. I've worked very hard with my staff over the past months to talk about how can we design a next generation of assessments that provide the highest quality, that provides the most information with it to educators, takes the least amount of time to administer, and provides timely results. And I had a staff member tell me once when we talked about this, that's a Venn diagram with nothing touching. And that's true. In today's assessment world, you can't get the most information and have a very short test. And I compare this to taking your child into the doctor, and if they're very sick and you go into the exam room and the doctor just takes the temperature and takes a look and says, you'll be okay in a few days. You'd feel like, wait a second, didn't spend enough time with my kid. I want to hear some more evaluation. In order to do that, they need to spend more time. The same thing works in educational assessment. You need more questions to be able to get more refined results. So our plan is to try and merge those cells and at least make them touch, if not overlap, in this. And what we're talking about doing is basing it on, and Dr. Yu has heard me present before, and some of you have, we've looked to our colleagues in other states and also what we've done in Minnesota, and basing it on what's happening in Oregon. Not all of it, but some of the design features are very pleasing. And so what they do is they actually have a testing window that runs from October to May, and you take the test when you're ready. Not everybody jams in at the end of the year. And they can think about that from an educational aspect. It makes some sense. If I'm already mastered the grade 5 standards, why should I wait till the end of the year to have to keep relearning them and relearning them before I'm tested on them? We believe that if we put this on computer, and I should make this preface also, that we know that in the interim we are probably going to have to do dual mode. It is probably, at least from my perspective, that it is impossible to take the whole state and turn the key and put the whole test on computer for everyone. That's likely not to happen and be successful. So we're probably going to have a paper test in parallel for those that choose to do it. But the computer will allow us to provide innovative items that demonstrate student depth of knowledge. We don't have to ask those constructive response where humans score them anymore, and we can get at the same information. Computer adaptive, we can get more precise inferences. Most educational measurement experts will agree that an adaptive assessment will provide more precise measurements. It is a flexible window. As I suggested, they have some security considerations they've taken into place, and you can give that test when you're ready, and you can pause the test when you need to. So they have that wrapped up. And then we know that we can get results much more quickly. They also, and again, something we're looking at, this has been approved by the federal government, they test up to 3 times during the year, and you take the highest test score that you receive during the year. You don't have to test 3 times. I'm not advocating for it.
But if you need to do additional assessment of that student's skills against the state standards, they have that opportunity. I'll show you some pictures of what teachers and building principals will look like, and again, they're able to pause that so they don't have to alter their computer lab. I apologize for the resolution, but this is a mock-up of what they do in Oregon, which is a teacher gets, when the student is taking the exam, based on state standards, where did the student perform? Here's the scale score, here's where they are, and here's the substrand information on how they did. And it's, you can now make some educational decisions tomorrow. It's trying to squeeze more information out of the summative. Building principals can take a look at this kind of information, and they get real-time information on how many have tested once, twice, three times. And you can see that this is, you know, in Oregon, this would be something that was taken at the end of the year, perhaps. Not everybody taking the test three times. Building principals, classroom teachers can receive this kind of information, which is, where are my kids today, right now, in proficiency? Where were they at this time last year? And where were they at the end of the year? So they have some information, and building principals do. They know about proficiency during the year as opposed to in the summer, which is not our pleasure. And again, probably the worst of the mock-up slides that you'll be able to see is this is what a superintendent could receive, though. This is a list of schools, and it will tell me how many of my students are partial meets, exceeds, etc., that they can get that information in real time on their desktop computer and take a look at that. This is just, I'll give you a couple of quick examples, but putting multiple choice questions on computer is not technically challenging. Many assessments have been doing that for years. What is, we believe, based off of what we've experienced with science, is these types of figural responses where students, and this is just a lower level math item, where students can get, we can get the same information, but students can use the computer to demonstrate that knowledge. We have these in science, and I will say that, you know, our science test is the first in the nation to use this kind of interactive assessment, and now we have other states commonly calling us, and even the National Assessment of Educational Progress is moving this direction. That's part of the 3-8 proposal. I will take a very brief moment to talk about what are options for end of course. There are essentially three options that states are looking at across the country, either a comprehensive exam, end of course exams, or doing something like college admissions tests like ACT or SAT. This slide alone would take me 30 minutes, and I know you don't want me to do that, so I will try and do it in 2.5 or 2 or 1. This is a thought on how, if the state were to move to an end of course transition, how could it be done, for example, in mathematics? And looking down at the bottom first, we have 11th graders that are currently in the system taking the MCA 2 in grad. Whatever policy decision is made, and I know that's yet to be made about what happens with the high school graduation test, recommendation, at least from my little corner of the world, is to let that policy decision sit. It will take long enough for everybody to know that's what we're doing for 5 years. So let that policy decision sit. The sixth graders, this year's sixth graders, are the first ones that are required under statute to pass, or excuse me, not pass, but take eighth grade Algebra 1 and Algebra 2 by the time they exit high school. That is a nice group of students with whom you can, you've got enough time to make a transition to a new kind of assessment system and apply what states the policymakers want to apply to it. The purple squares in the middle are actually, those students come through in 2011 or in 8th grade, and what we've discussed internally is to allow the MCA 2 to carry the weight for accountability, for No Child Left Behind, etc., and let districts opt in at no stakes taking the geometry and the Algebra 2 end of course tests. If they promise to put them in some part of the grade, we'll have motivated conditions that we can trust the data, and we'll have 2 years of data that we can look at, we can model, we can say, which test do you want to include for accountability? What should be the cut score? We've got all kinds of real data to make decisions.
You click on to the financial part, because this is not the policy committee. I think we got that one.
The current cost between this proposal and what we currently fund is the 8th grade, or excuse me, the 3 through 8 plus end of course, the math and reading are essentially the top two rows are the ones that will receive an increase. To do adaptive testing, as Dr. Yeh mentioned, does take considerable item banks, so that most of the costs are going to go for increasing the item bank so we can ask the appropriate questions to the students, and also we will have to do some field testing for those item types that I demonstrated. You see a number of others that essentially will be discontinued. We believe we've learned enough lessons about the MCAL, and we're already making design changes on how we do math for our students, not just for ELLs, to make a better math test. And so we believe the MCAL has served its purpose and can eventually be discontinued. The grad writing, if you go to an end-of-course model, would be discontinued. The BST, obviously discontinued. The T, some kind of BLR test would have to remain. And then the grad, again, discontinued. So this does streamline the assessment system quite considerably. This slide 30 just demonstrates the current program plus the governor's proposal, and the governor's proposal what matches the change item that was released with the budget. I was also asked to talk about alternatives to that and to the governor's proposal, and I'll try and do that again. I hope to do so very briefly. I asked about using the formative for summative purposes, and I think it's relatively well agreed upon within, again, the measurement community that is it's not exactly the best policy decision to take a formative and put summative stakes onto a formative test. Certainly, it reduces the number of tests, but you actually change how that formative assessment is used. Teachers no longer can use it and look at the data and kind of have that examination room kind of informal setting. It now places stakes on top of the summative. So I provided in your handout also, this is a quote from CCSSO, the Chief State School Officers, talking about how to build a balanced assessment system. And essentially, they cite several researchers who say it's not intended to be used for accountability purposes. Then finally, the differences between those different end-of-course tests versus comprehensive tests. There are certain pluses and minuses, and I'll let you peruse those as you will. Most research is saying that if you want a comprehensive one, you need to do it in 11th grade. If you want to know if students are college ready or not, it needs to happen in 11th grade, and we know there's some challenges with that, as we've all been discussing. California has one that determines whether it's comprehensive and determines if they're college ready by asking more questions. If you open this part of the book, we'll let you know if you're ready to go on to a California state school. So that's how they've tried to do it. And of course, tests provide much more flexibility, most will say, in policy options, because you have different levels of how you can implement those. So there are end of course tests, and that's the governor's proposal has identified end of course as a direction. The New York Region exams has 18 different end of course tests. I don't believe that's the number that we have listed in the proposal, but they've been doing end of course for some time and have cut scores for both their state and city universities. And that seems to be the trend that's heading across the country. That doesn't mean you do it because it's in vogue, but it seems to be picking up educational merit. And then finally, and it is finally, the modified college assessments. Those are challenging to do. SATs, ACTs, let's give that test. Well, we still have to do it for accountability under federal and state guidelines. To just give the student a norm-based test that we don't know the content of, we still have to do alignment. We still have to probably develop items that will augment that test. I talked to and here are three first states that are doing it. I talked to my colleague in Michigan just a couple of days ago and asked him how Michigan is one that's adopted it. You see, they have 460 minutes over 3 days. And he said, Dirk, here's a slide for you that you can show if you'd like. They did adopt wholesale the ACT test, and they had to do additional work. They went from $19 a student up to $185, and he mentioned that it's increased their cost by 300 to 500% for the high school test. I'm not talking disparagingly of ACT, but there is very rarely you can grab an off-the-shelf test and just drive it out of the parking lot. There's additional work that needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Matson. You don't have rapid assessment on the list that Dr. Yeh talked about. Could you say why not, and then we'll go back to Dr. Yeh and get some thoughts that he has on your presentation, and then you can we can go back to you if we still have time before Dr. Yeh has to leave. Dr. Matson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, rapid assessment, I've been chatting with Dr. Yeh, and it certainly is an intriguing option. It is certainly, as Dr. Yeh has identified, a formative assessment, and thus far into the testing history of Minnesota, we have not ventured into formative assessment. So I don't think that there's certainly no opposition from myself personally or the department as a whole on formative assessment. So I think that's an interesting consideration to include. I don't think that, there isn't a place where we could say it's going to be X particular brand or vendor, and I think that Dr. Yeh has pointed that out as well. So, but teachers are doing that type of formative assessment. It's just, it's important to note that that will not overtake just that rapid assessment portion that he was talking about. A version of formative assessment will not
supersede the summative. We still will have to give a summative. For example, and I think Dr. Yeh would agree, we are not able to take the rapid assessment and say, good, now let's close out the MCA2s and we're all done with those. We still have to produce, for many different reasons, accountability required, some kind of formative assessment.
Thank you very much, Dr. Yeh.
So I would not disagree with anything that Dr. Mattson has said. I think that the issue is, do we consciously take into account the cost and the need to implement something that's going to raise student achievement instead of just measure it? So I think we all understand the budget constraints. So if we have to make some trade-offs, where are those trade-offs going to be? I think that the shift towards computer adaptive testing will result in some savings, and Dr. Mattson and I were talking about what the magnitude of those savings might be. So there would be funds available, I think, if we shifted to that direction for something like rapid assessment. But I think consciously thinking about where are we going to put our resources in order to raise student achievement as well as measure it?
Thank you. And that gets back to Dr. Ward, or Representative Ward's question. Hi, everybody's a doctor today. Dr. Yeh, do you remember his question? I think you do. And what would your answer be?
I'm sorry, could you refresh my memory?
Okay, Representative Ward.
Dr. Yeh, my question was, as I have looked at the history that Dr. Mattson laid out from 95 on, tell us about the characteristics of students post-95, and what they have gained, or what we feel the assessments have done for our students at this point.
Dr. Yeh.
Okay. I think if I understand the question, you're asking what has been the impact of testing on student achievement. And I can't remember if it's Dr. Warren. Did he testify before the committee previously? Okay, that might have been the Ed Policy Committee. But Dr. Warren has testified before the Ed Policy Committee, and his research indicates that there's no effect of high-stakes testing in improving student achievement. My reading of the literature is that there may be a very small effect. So in one key study that I looked at, the effect was perhaps 2 weeks of learning per year. That's a very, very tiny effect. And so if we were to compare something like rapid classroom assessment as an intervention, that is 57 times as cost effective in terms of raising student achievement. So I think I had testified before the Ed Policy Committee that we should not rely on high-stakes testing to raise student achievement. The research just does not support that conclusion. And as Dr. Mattson has pointed out, that's really not the purpose. It's really more to provide a check about where we are. So for the purpose of raising student achievement, we need to think about other things.
So that's what we're trying to figure out, the cost-benefit, and we're doing a lot of testing that's costing a lot more. And so that's part of what this committee is going to have to work on. Dr. Mattson, do you want to respond to Dr. Yeh, and then we'll get Mr. Olson-Skog up here?
Madam Chair, I would not disagree with that. I think I've read Dr. Yeh's work, and he draws some conclusions in that. My premise would be that, and I hope Dr. Yeh agrees with this. We haven't chatted about this, but it is not you hear the expression a lot, the number of times you weigh the pig will not make the pig fatter. It is not the assessment itself that's going to make students smarter. It is because whether it's Dr. Yeh's or the MCA2s or pick another third person sitting next to me, giving that test over and over again is not going, and I'm not trying to couch it in a poor light, but any test, if we gave the MCA2s every week, students will not get smarter just because we did it. What happens is the interventions that teachers do with that information. Poor as it may be on the MCA2s, but we do have information for curricular change, and the direction that we're trying to go is to provide more, squeeze more information out of that summative assessment. One other thing, too, if I just may quickly add,
Dr. Yu's savings here, the first time I've seen that. I just want to point out, though, there are so much, as he identifies, about $10 million a year. We do have other additional assessments that we currently are mandated to do. So we have English language learner assessments that must be done. We have alternate assessments that must be done. We have graduation exams that must be done. So under current statute. The savings may be addressed there, but I think if those are added in, and I'm certainly not to arm wrestle the savings and the cost, but I just think that's an important thing to keep in mind as well, that there are additional assessments.
We'll take five more minutes on this section. I see two questions on the list here, Representative Mariani, Representative Smales, and if we still have the 5 minutes left, Representative Depke.
This is a question of a very quick observation that we should be really careful as we talk through the nature and the purposes of these tests, that we're intermingling a summative methodology with a high-stakes purpose. Those two don't need to go together. And so I think I am convinced that there are some very important uses for summative testing, particularly with using computer adaptive, sort of quicker, information that flows out that can be used. But setting a high-stakes nature on any test, regardless of whether it's formative or some whatever, is another issue entirely. And so when we talk about the grad test, so the issue that comes to the forefront immediately for all of us is this question of the high-stakes purpose and the consequences of that high-stakes application of that test. So I just want us to be real clear about that distinction.
Thank you, Representative Mills. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Mattson, I deeply appreciate your, you put your heart and soul into all of this testing, and I just, I do appreciate that. However, as a classroom teacher and somebody who has been immersed in this now throughout the history of the tsunami of testing in Minnesota, I really do want you to know that from a classroom teacher's perspective, the most valuable tests that we have are the NWEAs. And the reason for that is we get immediate feedback. I do know that the high-stakes tests provide us with that all-important RIT scores, that when I meet my students for the first time, I can look and see who is at the appropriate score, who needs help. But what I love about the NWEA is that it gives me an immediate snapshot of how my students are doing. And it just feels like such a redundancy of tests. And that's why when we talk about high-stakes testing, maybe by the time students get to high school, they're a little more dated, but they lose that sense of urgency about what high-stakes testing means, unless it's an SAT, ACT, something that's a college entrance type test. Thanks, and I think that was the statement. Representative Depke.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question has to do with the cost of the test, and you had brought that up. First of all, I'm assuming that we outsource the current test, and that's one of the reasons that it takes so long. Are there lots of vendors that do those testings? You do them. I assume you're not doing them all within the Department of Education. But is that part of the higher cost? That because Dr. Yeh's recommendation was to go to a fewer tests, but also do the rapid assessment, which would be computerized. You get quicker results. Is there a cost differential? Is there still going to be an outsourced vendor involved? And how do you choose the vendors when you're doing the testing?
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. The vendor is selected for assessments, and there are, if I say a number, I'm sure I'll be wrong, but there are at least 8 to 10 major assessment development companies. Mm-hmm. I may have been liberal in that number, but it's not a large number, and there are 50 states. So they are certainly have a limited pool. We select the contractor in a similar manner that's been, or in the manner that's been prescribed by statute. So we go through a request for proposals process just like any other product that's purchased. You are correct that while we do have staff to work with item development, to work with managing the projects, that we probably would not have, especially in a computer adaptive mode,
the software, the proprietary software and so forth to do adaptive testing. So roughly every 5 years a new testing contractor is chosen, and that's done through a public RFP process, similar to any other public works that's done by the state. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Day, do you have a final word before you leave? And we're going to keep Dr. Mattson here, and then we'll go to Representative Ward after we get the next testifier in. But Dr. Yeh.
I just wanted to follow up on that last question there. I think that maybe what the representative was getting at is what might be the possible cost savings if we went to perhaps more off-the-shelf tests. But I think Dr. Mattson has pointed out the need to modify any off-the-shelf test for a number of reasons, and that is, as soon as you start modifying, that there are costs involved with that. But if we are shifting from the current paper and pencil MCA 2 tests, which have open-ended response items that have to be hand-scored, to a computer adaptive test that does not have that hand-scoring component, then there are cost savings, and those could be substantial.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Yeh, very much. Safe travels wherever you're going next.
Thank you.
And Mr. Olson Skolg, if you could come up. And yes, you have to make the seat switch for these PowerPoints that everybody has. And Mr. Olson Skolg is someone that Representative Mariani has worked with a long time and told me I really ought to get to meet him since he was from the Roseville Area School. And finally I did, and we decided to have one district come in and talk about what is the cost in a district. And so welcome, and please give us your presentation. If you could restate your name for the tape as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee. My name is Peter Olson Skolg, and I'm from Roseville Area School. And I've been asked to talk about the district cost of testing. With your indulgence, there's a couple of things that came up in the two previous presentations that I'd like to just pause on so that line of thought doesn't leave you. And that is in regard
to... Could you speak a little louder?
Yes, I can.
People have trouble hearing.
I'm not a doctor, but I can speak loud. I don't know how many of you play video games. I do. And when I play video games, one of the things that I like about video games, and one of the things that pretty much any kid likes about video games, is the fact that there's a TV screen in front of you. And if you do something wrong, you immediately find out that you did wrong. You fall off the cliff, something breaks, something explodes, and you figure it out pretty quickly. And so the exciting things that I heard from Dr. Yeh as he was presenting in terms of this rapid assessment measure, it is something that's happening currently in school districts in the support of the legislation, the support of the department in that pursuit would be welcome. And that's in putting more assessments where we get the kinds of feedback that we can react to quickly. Now, the statement that Dr. Mattson made in terms of being careful about mixing formative and summative assessments, that'd be like attaching a little shock electrode in the video game that you were playing, and if you did something wrong, not only did your guy fall off the screen, but you got a little shock as you were doing it. You probably wouldn't want to play that game very much for very long. And so it is crucial to think about these two things as, all right, what types of assessments can give us quick feedback that teachers can give their students frequent and informative feedback for? So I'm happy to hear that conversation happening at all levels that are discussing it right now. In terms of the actual cost of district testing, I'll return to the presentation now. In my first slide, I just want to make clear that this is based on some rough estimates of Roseville costs, Roseville Area School District, which comprises a number of communities. But I think that it can be reasonably extrapolated to other school districts. And I did check this out with one of my other colleagues from another school district and said, are these time estimates reasonable, and if we divided by your number of students, would these be reasonable estimates? And he confirmed that. What can cause some of the variability in terms of costs for school districts? If a school district has more special education students, then that increases the cost because those tests they take longer and they're more expensive to give. The types of training procedures they use, the types of logistics procedures the district might have, and then the fact that there is some economy of scale. When you go to a larger school district, the smaller school districts frequently will have the same projects to do, but fewer people to do them. And it still takes somebody to do those tests. So, in terms of the general types of costs, we have to train the people that get in front of the students to give the tests. These are the proctors, so we have to train them. And we have to train them pretty much every time because there is, we try to raise their anxiety because our anxiety is heightened around making sure that the rules are followed as we give these tests and that everybody knows what they're supposed to say, when they're supposed to say it, and how they're supposed to say it. One other note that I should give as I go through this is that the costs that I'm detailing are not assessments in general. They're not tests that we elect to give, and they're not the remediation or anything that goes along with it, the things that would improve. It is just the cost of administering the MDE test that Dr. Matson went through in his presentation. You get a lot of boxes in my line of work. They come in droves, and you have to receive them, inventory them, prepare them, get them out to the teachers, make sure that they don't that nothing's lost there, get them back, box them back up, ship them back off in the right amount of time. Now that we are moving towards computer labs, you have to make sure, or computer testing, you have to make sure the computer labs are set to go. So that might mean putting in a new program. If the company comes up with a new version of that testing program, then you have to go and install it in the different labs, and so that's some of the cost there. Cleaning up of the data is something that people in my line of work really enjoy doing in that June month. It's instead of a vacation, we comb through our data and make sure that everybody who says that they have limited English proficiency indeed does, and so that's one of the costs that go into giving these tests. Mailing the results home, and so if you add all these things up, I'm going to skip through a lot of the slides that come next, because I hear apparently shorter is better, so I'll just skip through a lot of it. But the summary of most of the slides that come next is that in a district our size, which is about 6,400 students, the time when you add it up is roughly 4 full-time people. And when you throw in a mix of administrators, clerical staff, and teachers, and kind of average the costs of that out, a rough estimate is that it costs us $41 per pupil per year to administer the MDE test. So, depending on how big your school district is or small district your school district is, it's obviously not going to be perfectly linear because of economies of scale. So, other types of costs, material costs. There's copying of assessments to do. There's buying the envelopes. There's the postage to mail them to the homes. And we roughly estimated that to about $1 per student per year. And then another area of cost are the opportunity costs, lost computer lab time. It is a trade-off because computer, as we've discussed, the computerized tests do give us quicker, better information to provide better remediation. That the trade-off there is that there's less time for students to go into the lab and do other things that they would be doing with the computer lab. And so, as a result, in Roseville, each site added on a new computer lab, converted a classroom or some other room into a computer lab. And that was, in our district, 5,400 students, that was about $400,000 across the district. And the tech allowance that was put out in the budget last year, if I'm remembering correctly, was about $52 per pupil. That did help greatly, and that is where most of the dollars were directed from the tech allowance. That being said, computers have a lifespan. Our district, we estimate 4 to 5 years, and so once that 4 to 5 years comes, then we would be hoping either for another tech allowance or an understanding that our computers are going to be getting older and older. And then there's this notion of lost instructional time. Now, both of the opportunity costs, I had a hard time quantifying monetarily for you. I really am just going to use an example of one of the many slides that I have coming up. These are just estimates for each test that you heard Dr. Matson talk about. I'm actually going to skip to the MCA Reading and Math 3.8. And in that slide, you'll see that in a school district, again, our size is 6,400 students, we have about 280 staff members that each need about an hour of training time. There's four sessions times 2 hours times those 280 staff members, which totals about 2,240 hours of staff time face-to-face proctoring. There's about 400 hours of site coordination, which is the eight sites that we have at that level times about 40 hours for that particular test. There's about 65 hours of district coordination. Each site has a site coordinator, so we have a district coordinator for testing, but each site has a site coordinator. It's not their whole job, but it is a big part of their job come testing season. And so that person receives a two-hour training from the district coordinator times three staff members. That would be the district coordinator, the site coordinator, and the principal are involved in that training. If there's a new site coordinator, then it takes more like 10 hours for that training. And then on top of that, I didn't pull MTEL, which is the mathematics test for English language learners, which is an accommodated version of the MCA. I didn't pull it out as a separate thing because it is part of this. And the additional cost for here that I haven't included in this number is really just the time to get the lab set up for the students that are going to be taking that. But otherwise, it's a proctor, somebody in there giving the test just like the other one. I'll skip really through all of those to the slide that says other costs associated with required tests. I mentioned data cleanup earlier. We estimate in our school district that's about 200 hours. It's about 2 weeks of full-time work for a couple people, myself included, in addition to some extraneous work that happens from our MARS coordinators and our student information coordinators and a couple other people. Other costs, remediation, that was discussed earlier, so you get the results. So what are the other costs associated with these testing? Well, once you get the results back, you have to do something with the results. So there's some remediation costs that would be analyzing the data is not even listed there, but that's a cost. Maintaining technology standards I referred to briefly when we talked to the life cycle of computers. And then instructional activities specific for test format familiarity. That's a long set of words which in short, you would refer to as test prep. I believe that good tests are based on their standards, and that's why I say versus teaching the standards. And that's what we want to spend the vast majority of our time doing. That being said, kids need to be familiar with the test. It's unfair. We had a new test item, the type of test question that came up a year or two ago, a gridded response item, where students are filling in. It's just a different type of question. Instead of writing out a number, they bubble in 9.1.3. So it takes some time to make sure that the students are experienced with those types of problems. So that's another associated cost that I didn't detail previously.
Thank you very much, and thank you for condensing your report, because we like the question and answer, and Dr. Mattson being here too, we could perhaps get some interaction. Representative Ward, your question hopefully is still timely.
It is, Madam Chair. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Dr. Mattson, this deal with costs. We're talking about costs. Both of you have talked about costs. And this is a slide that talks about current spending 2009. I noticed the highest appropriation, the highest cost there was for hand scoring. Then I noticed technology enhancements were about 680, that was 5.5 million. And technology enhancements were 680-some thousand. I just wanted to ask, just a cost factor. If we doubled the technology enhancement, would that eliminate the hand scoring? I mean, can you explain that to me? Why is hand scoring such a high? I mean, I know it's probably labor intense, but you testified so much of this now is computer based. Most of you testified computer based kind of situation. So can you just give us some insight on that?
Dr. Matt?
Yeah, I'm Madam Chair, Representative Ward. Just to be clear, my testimony was we are looking to move more to computer based, but the current system, the hand scoring certainly is a huge bulk of that. That means that there are roughly between 3 to 4 operational, meaning count for the student's grade, constructive response questions where students explain their answer. We also field test additional ones for preparation for future exams. So we have between 4 to 8 construct the response items that need to be scored by humans, and that's a boatload of items. So you're right, it is labor intensive, and that is what the cost is. The technical support and analysis, just to be clear, that is a lot of the work that we do psychometrically. So we have, for example, standard setting activities. We have one that we scheduled to come up for the graduation. What standard setting is identifying what's proficient, et cetera, and there's some technical work around that. There's equating. We pay a contractor for identifying and double-checking the scores and numbers are accurate. So it's not technical in an information technology or an IT or computer sense. It's technical in measurement technical stuff.
Rep. Thank you. Rep. Mariani.
Peter, Olson Skunk. Good to see you again.
You're the one that told me I should.
I know, you should connect with this guy. Yeah. Two questions, quickly. So, $41 per average, you know, for MD, you know, the big test here, the required test. Does your district participate in NWEA assessments? What are the costs related to that? You don't have to break them all down, but I mean, is that a equal cost? Is that a larger cost, a lesser cost? And I suspect at some point, like many other districts, you're probably thinking, is there a way for us to somehow kind of, you know, pull these things together and make us more efficient, both in cost expenditures, but also in terms of deployment of staff and other resources?
Mr. Olson Skog.
Madam Chair. Yes, we do the NWEA. The costs in the NWEA, Dr. Ye already mentioned, they are consistent. It's not exactly a, they don't cut it down by how many students you put it in, it's what percentage of your district is in there. So if 100% of your district is doing it, then it's $1,250. And then, so that's that cost. In terms of the other costs, well, there's no packing, like the MCA grad retests and like some of the computerized tests from MDE, there's no boxes to ship. There's no packing up and there's no doing any of that. So that cost is not there. The accountability around the security would make the MDE tests, we spend more time on proctor training around the MDE tests than we do around the NWEA tests. Otherwise, you still have a person in the lab. Because this test is becoming feels very stable to us. We've been doing it for a little while now. We don't feel the need to have a tech person in there full time while the test is being given, which we do for the MCA science and the MCA grad. So that's a little bit of cost differential that we've seen between the two tests. In terms of the second portion of the question. Do we see some overlap between the two tests? I would paint it as a Venn diagram where the circles do connect. The overlap between the two tests is that they both give you something comparative. You can say, here's my students, here's how they're doing in mathematics, here's how they compare to other students in the NWEA, it's versus the nation, and the MCA, it's versus the state. So they both do that. Because it's an adaptive test, I believe that and as you've heard from Dr. Ye, that I think it gives you a better read of where they are in their skills in mathematics and reading. And the reason being that if you have a student that gets all the questions right on the MCA, you have a hard time telling what they can't do. If you have a student that gets all the questions wrong on the MCA, you have a problem telling what they can do. So on one end, where are their weaknesses, and on the other end, where are their strengths, because those are critical things to helping a student move along. And so I'm excited to see that we're moving towards adaptive testing. I'm excited to see that the federal government is moving towards, at least that's what I understood, the ability to have a fully adaptive test where you're not just restricted to saying the beginning of third grade to the end of third grade items. Those are all good things. So yes, there's overlap, and to the extent that the regulations around the MCA can be broadened, that would be, well, actually, that would create even more overlap between the two tests.
Representative Dietrich. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a
You know, during this whole discussion, you look at the different price for implementing two different tests, and we were kind of Representative Detmer and I were kind of talking about why the high cost, or not high cost, the cost differential and that thing. So I have a question for you. If the NWEA were to be high stakes tests, would the cost of administering the test go up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich. If we gave the NWEA a high stakes test, would the cost go up? Well, I'm assuming if we gave it as a high stakes test, the cost for the district would go drastically down because we would no longer be paying the $12 per pupil. So there would be that. But in terms of the increase in accountability, would that go up?
The proctoring.
It would depend on how similar. My best answer would be it would depend on how similar it would be in required process to what we are currently required to do. The more requirements that are put on, you know, the proctor has to say this and do this and do that. Then the training gets longer, and you have to make sure that more checks and balances are in place. But if it stayed relatively similar, then maybe not. We might not see, in terms of cost to the state of Minnesota, not much of a difference than is currently being picked up by the districts.
Mr. Olsensilk, are you familiar with the rapid assessments that Dr. Yeh talked about? Have those been used in Roseville or any other schools?
Once you mentioned accelerated math and accelerated reader, I had a better understanding of what specifically he was talking about. And yes, they have been. Yes, they are used. And it goes back to the analogy of the video game. Let's take that analogy again, except now you're playing a video game, you have the controller in your hand, but there's no screen. Or you only get to see the screen once every year. That's the problem with, in terms of students improving based on the results that you see. Now, that's not to say that there's no use for these summative tests. They are checks and balances for the schools and the districts, and we do use them in large-scale district improvement planning processes. But specific to your question, rapid assessments, yes, they are in use, and yes, we are seeing good results.
So you're using them in Roseville, then?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I can't really ask Dr. Mastin this, because he's got to stick with whatever the governor's plan is, whether he agrees with it or not. So we assume that's his plan, and we won't ask if he disagrees, because that would not be fair. But let me ask Mr. Olsen-Skog, what would be your, if you're looking at what is proposed by the governor and what we're doing in Minnesota, and you can, I'm sure, pick up on the fact that if this committee is asked to cut, we're wondering, should we be doing the extra $7.5 million that the governor's asking for? Should we be consolidating tests and cutting down? Is this any place to cut costs or not? And because obviously we want schools and the department to have time to work on what to do if the measuring shows problems, not just measure and not have any time or money to do anything about it. So what would be your ideal package of tests based on what we're doing and what's being proposed and what you think?
Well, I said earlier that the movement towards adaptive testing, in however close we can get to fully adaptive testing, I think is money well invested. I think that it takes the assessments that we have in place and makes them more accurate. So I would fully support that move. Whether it's off the shelf as Dr. Yeh was talking about, or whether it's internally developed, that would probably be a cost benefit analysis, and I'm not sure that I could exactly speak to that. The other pieces of the proposal that I heard was in terms of the end of course test. That was another that was mentioned. I speak for Roseville, and I'll speak for myself as well. I'm skittish, to be perfectly honest. I am looking. We entered into a new test here with the grad, and we're experiencing, I would phrase, some growing pains with it. And So as we move into the end of course exam, I'm wanting to make sure, and Dr. Madsen had some plans for how it would be laid out. You know, it could be worked into the grade so that the data would be there, and so there's some plans there for that. But I just want to make sure that whatever we put as a gateway for our students to receiving a diploma, if that's the plan for end of course exam, we really take the time to thoughtfully get that in place before it actually becomes high stakes. I understand the psychometric difficulties of that, because how do you get good data if it's not high stakes for the kids? So at this point on end of course, I'm going to have to say I don't know at this point, because I haven't seen enough in either direction to convince me that it's a good idea yet.
And what about the plan to eliminate or to at least discuss eliminating the exit requirements?
With the current grad in the place that it's in now, I would support that.
Mm-hmm. And then your perfect model would not include rapid assessments, then?
Oh, I'm sorry. I like rapid assessments. I will be more explicit. My current model would include rapid assessments if that was available to us. I think it would be appreciated and used by the school district. It's rapid assessments, I think, it's difficult for me to kind of delineate that from some other. I don't know exactly what we're talking about, but if we're talking about formative assessments in general, those are better for improving student performance than summative assessments. So some type of formative assessment in place, I think, would be great.
And maybe for either one of you, I don't want to know what else is on the list yet. I guess I should have asked this when Dr. Ye was here, but I'm having trouble knowing the difference between formative assessments and rapid assessments. Mr. Olson, Skog Olson, Olson Skog. Olson Skog.
Mr. Olson. There we go. Any assessment, it doesn't matter what you put on a paper. In my mind, I mean, more will be it will incline one way or the other to a summative or a formative assessment. I mean, you're not going to put a 200 question test in front of the kid and call it formative. But formative and summative is really more about how you use the results than it is about what the test exactly looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Formative needs to be, some key characteristics about a formative assessment is you need to get the results back quickly so that you can form your instruction based off of it. If all you're trying to do is sum up the effect of your instruction, i.e. summative assessments, then you have some time and you don't have to worry about the results getting back as quickly. So in terms of the difference between rapid assessments and formative assessments, I'm not sure that there is much of a one between the two. Dr. Ye might point out a specific subset of formative assessments, but I think they're largely the same.
Okay. Thank you. Rep. Dietrich.
Yeah, since there's nobody on the list, I'll ask a question. In the rapid assessment, most of us are probably familiar with accelerated reading, as you mentioned. That is a pre-designed curriculum, right? You can answer that. And then, is that developed? I know the only place that I've ever seen it implemented is in elementary schools. So is there a middle school version of accelerated reading or accelerated math and a high school version? And eventually, if it works the way that I work, I see that very similar as to almost online learning, and the way that the teacher plays a role in facilitating the learning and the student controls their learning by making choices, reading the piece and taking the test and getting the kind of assessing their own work. So go ahead. Mr. Olsen-Skog.
Madam Chair, the question, if I could clarify, is to describe further how something like Accelerated Reader works and whether it has a specific curriculum around it?
Is the curriculum
Mr. Olson, and this will be our final comment because the meeting is going to end shortly.
Not to my understanding of the program. They have a set list of books around which they have tests that test the comprehension. So a student picks from a list of accelerated books and reads one of those, typically at their choosing, and with some direction from the teacher to say that this is an appropriately leveled book for that student. Student reads it, goes into the lab, takes the test, and then the computer provides the teacher with some feedback and the student with some feedback about what level of book they would read next.
Thank you very much. It was a helpful hearing, and the meeting is adjourned.